Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Republican House that failed to raise the debt ceiling would somehow escape all the blame. Then Democrats would have no choice but to pass a balanced budget amendment and reform entitlements, and the Tea Party hobbits could return to Middle Earth having defeated Mordor. This is the kind of crack political thinking that turned Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell into GOP Senate nominees. The reality is that the debt limit will be raised one way or another. And the only issue now is how, with how much fiscal reform and what political fallout.
Shame on you, McCain. Tom McCain, the shame, attacks the Tea Party, attacks Sharon Angle, attacks Christine O'Donnell, virtually attacks everything that the people who respect this nation stand for. Welcome to the Savage Nation. With friends like him, we don't need enemies. And now you know why you have Obama as president. Remember during the campaign how he kept undermining himself day after day. Every time he moved ahead in the polls, he would do something to set himself back in the polls. Do you remember that just before the final debate, I said, okay, Senator McCain, here's the one line you can defeat Obama with. I wrote it for you. You listen to him, you smile at him, and you say, Senator Obama, we've heard it all before. It's called trickle-up poverty. That would have given him the lead over Obama. He would have become president. I don't know whether we would have had much difference than we have today under Obama, because clearly there's not much of a difference between the ruling rhino class and the ruling Democrat class at the end of the day. But for a crackhead like Senator John McCain, and when I say crackhead, I make no reference to the use of drugs. I mean, his head is cracked along the lines of Humpty Dumpty who fell off a wall. This guy is a crackpot. For him to attack the Tea Parties, who caused a revolution during the last election, for him to attack the ladies who represented the American people who want a smaller government, less taxes, and less spending, Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell tells us everything we need to know. Now, there's not much difference between McCain and Gerald Nadler, the shame from Brooklyn. Gerald Nadler, Democrat Brooklyn, says we don't have a deficit problem, we need higher taxes. Old Gerald Nadler, who's been on Jenny Craig, says we don't have a deficit problem. We must spend more to get out of a crisis. Listen to clips 8 and 9 now from old Gerald Nadler, Democrat, Brooklyn.
In 1950, corporations paid taxes equal to 8% of GDP. Today, they're paying taxes equal to less than 1% of GDP. In 1980, corporations' taxes were 30% of total tax revenues. Today, they're 6% of total tax revenues. We've taken the taxes off the corporations and off the rich. So we have to get our priorities straight. And when we talk about we got a budget deficit crisis, no, we don't. We have a tax crisis, we have a crisis that we're not taxing properly, and we have a recession and an unemployment crisis. And the way to get out of that unemployment process is to spend money on more food stamps and on aid to the states and local governments so they don't lay off people, and on infrastructure so we can be competitive and put people to work. And if we did that, unemployment would go down, tax receipts would go up, and we'd be well on our way out of this so-called crisis.
Yes, Mr. Stalin. Little Stalin Nadler from Brooklyn. That's the plan that Stalin used. That's the plan that every demagogue has ever used, which is spending, 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 and it's always collapsed their economies. Now, let's go back to the taxation lies that Nadler just put out. He says that in 1950, corporation paid taxes equal to 8% of GDP, and today it's less than 1% of GDP. Now, assuming that those facts are correct, Let us ask why Gerald Nadler is not attacking General Electric, which pays 0% of their income, even on U.S. earnings. They earned over $5 billion in the United States, General Electric did, so far as I recall, and they paid $0 in taxes. And yet, old Nadler from Brooklyn has nothing to say about General Electric, perhaps the most egregious example of corporations who pay no taxes. To make matters worse, let us ask old Nadler why he has nothing to say about the jobs czar, Jeffrey Immelt, who also happens to be the CEO of General Electric, who has decided yesterday or the day before to take the 115-year-old X-ray business of General Electric and rob it out of America, steal it, destroy it. He didn't create it, by the way. He's just a pirate. He is a corporate pirate who did nothing to build a damn thing, as far as I could tell. And yet this man, Jeffrey Immelt, is hired by Obama to be a job czar. His job is to create jobs, and here he is deporting jobs to Shanghai, China. And on top of it all, he is going to invest $2 billion in China in order to teach the Chinese how to be better engineers. I would say to you that not only should he be fired a job czar, he should be investigated by the United States Congress. It's unbelievable to me how he gets away with this. I am at the same time preparing my new novel. I mean, it's written. That's coming out in September, and you know about it. I read about it, Abuse of Power. I read it on the air. What you don't know is I really never stop writing. I never stop working. I'm also working on a new book about Obama. It's a sequel to Trickle Up Poverty. And one of the chapters is about the wreckage of the economy under the Democrats. And it opens with the story about Jeffrey Immelt, which to me symbolizes the greed and corruption of our times. Jeffrey Immelt and General Electric symbolize the corruption of our times, where a man who sacks an entire division of General Electric can still hold on to his position as job czar without a word from the media. At the same time, the corruption of deals between General Electric and Obama are nauseating. It's all in my next book, which I'm not even going to mention the title of because it's too soon out. And so I'm focusing on these things, and it's hard for me to bear it. Because I've been in America a very long time, many, many decades, and there's been ups and there's been downs. There's been more corruption sometimes and less corruption in other times. I have never in my life seen such corruption as I see now under Barack Hussein Obama. I've never seen anything like this in my life. And the prime example is of Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, who keeps his title as jobs czar while announcing he's going to destroy the X-ray business in Wisconsin that he had nothing to do with its building, and he's going to move it to Shanghai, China, and he's going to invest $2 billion of General Electric capital across China to teach the Chinese how to screw us even more than they've been doing. Now, if this is not an outrage that affects all of us, I'd like to know what is. GEL Healthcare is also the world's biggest maker of magnetic resonance imaging and cardiac tomography scanners. And they got about $1 billion of its $16 billion in sales from China last year. But the X-ray business, to be moved to China, to me, symbolizes the corruption and a devolvement of the American corporation and the devolvement of the American government media complex. But there's more. I mean, I could go on, and I think I have to. I can stop right now because I've given you enough to start with. But this man, Obama, is gagging us on his corruption and his incompetence. There's another story. Well, let me slow down for a minute. Let me take some calls on the Savage Nation. I'll give you some more to digest here. It's the middle of the summer, but it's hard to believe that we're watching a guy like Jeffrey Immelt get away with doing this to the American people in plain daylight and not a word from the media about it. Carl in New York on WOR, what do you have to say? What's on your mind?
Could you imagine if McCain would, Obama would have won 4 years later, or Hillary, and the spiral would have been, the tidal wave would have been so tremendous, we could never recover. Congress would have turned Republican. It would have still been Democrat, even stronger. Any Republican would have lost.
Wait, what you're saying is you're glad Obama won so that he gets thrown out in 2012, because why?
Because he's being exposed for what he is. McCain would have been...
But here's the problem. Here's the problem, Carl. Here's the problem. I know that what you're saying is true, but what you don't really seem to grasp is that the Republicans purposely threw the election. They wanted Obama to win in order to make certain that they get thrown, put back in office so they can continue sacking the American Treasury 2 years from now. Remember, the Republicans didn't have a very good track record under Bush, who was a liberal Republican who outspent the previous three administrations. Did you know that? Did you know that George Bush was a liberal Republican who outspent the three previous administrations in ways that were unimaginable? So he left a $1 trillion deficit, and Obama added $3 trillion to that $1 trillion. I guess you could say the Republicans are better managers of the herd because they only lose, let us say, one-fourth of the flock each time they take them up into the mountains instead of losing the entire flock. Andy, New York, WOR, go ahead, please.
Hello. Yes, Michael. Yes, I have been to many times to the Learning Center of General Electric in about 40 miles north of New York City, and also to their headquarters is in Fairfield County in Connecticut. I was a limousine driver, and I have witnessed, and I have drove many of their employees from all over the world, and I find shocking, and I wanted to bring to you, you know, just tell you what I've seen there. You know, they invest so much money outside this country that's not even, it's mind-boggling. They bring a lot of engineers from all over the world to train them here to do jobs that used to be done here, exactly what's going on with that company.
Yes, General Electric bypasses the U.S. marketplace, does not hire U.S. engineers if they can avoid it. They bring in lower salary Chinese engineers, Indian engineers, etc., in order to make sure that we have no educated engineering class left in this country. If I were president, I can guarantee you heads would roll with any corporation that dared do this in my country. I can guarantee you this man would be in front of a congressional panel explaining how he earned $5 billion in the General Electric U.S. division and paid no taxes. I would demand an answer. I don't know why we're not getting an answer. Thank you for the call. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You got a big birthday coming up in 2 weeks, and it's the big, can we mention this, the big 5-0?
You know, I feel real good about 5-0. Obviously, I've gotten a little grayer since I took this job, but otherwise I feel pretty good. And Michelle, you know, says that still thinks I'm cute, you know, and I guess that's all that matters, isn't it?
I'm speechless in Gaza. But we're focusing today on the corruption of the Obama administration with a special emphasis on Jeffrey Immelt of General Electric, who is allegedly our job czar, whose job is allegedly to bring in jobs to America, who is instead deporting jobs to China, deporting engineers out of America, sending $2 billion of capital from GE to China to train them so they can screw us even more. And there's not an outcry in Congress. Now, I recognize that they have to pass a budget. But if I were to prioritize, I would certainly look into General Electric immediately and see how they managed to earn $5.3 billion in U.S. profits last year and pay $0 in U.S. income taxes. I know how it works when you have foreign subsidiaries. You do not pay U.S. taxes on your foreign subsidiaries. But for a corporation of this magnitude to have a U.S. division, which earns $5 billion and still pay no U.S. taxes, owing to some shenanigans that they pulled by rewriting the tax code specifically for themselves by hiring former IRS agents to work for them to jury-rig the tax code so they don't have to pay a dime, is an outrage. It's also possibly, as far as I'm concerned, a criminal act. And I don't understand how this gets I don't understand how it happens, especially at a time like this. If you want to comment on Jeffrey Immelt and whether he should not only be fired as job czar, but indicted or investigated, let us say, by the U.S. Congress for his acts as chairman of General Electric, his deportation of the X-ray division, a division that was 115 years in Wisconsin. He did not build it. Far better men than him built this division. Far better men than him built General Electric. Far better men than him built the light bulb, developed the light bulb, invented the light bulb. Far better men than him built the wonderful things that General Electric is known for. And this corporate pirate in my opinion, has to be stopped, as do many other corporate pirates. With friends like him at the helm of General Electric, America does not need any enemies, believe me. So let's take your calls on this important topic. Chicago, Teddy, welcome to the program.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hello? I don't answer how I am, Teddy. Didn't the call screener instruct you that please, what's on your mind, Teddy?
All right, well, I'm studying to be a mechanical engineering student at Ohio University. I live in Chicago. And it's pretty scary to me that all these engineering jobs are either being eliminated or shipped overseas to China or India or...
Well, you see, America shouldn't need engineers. All America should need are community organizers and webmasters. There's no need for you to know how to actually be an engineer. We can import them from China after they take over America. But the American male should be given jobs such as web designers or party planners or things like that. You shouldn't have to be an engineer. Leave it to the smart Chinese to do it or the smart Indians. The American male doesn't belong in the engineering profession anymore. That should be given to our friends in India and China. At least that's the thinking of the corporate heads and guys like Obama who were put in by the corporate heads. Because apparently they would pay them. They could pay them less. That's the real reason. It has nothing to do with loyalty to China or loyalty to India. It's that they can hire them for less money in plain English. That's all. Tennessee, Josh, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
It's the Republicans' fault that GE is not paying any taxes. Because when they did the debt negotiations, the Democrats wanted to, you know, close the corporate loopholes, and GE's explained those corporate loopholes. And Republicans...
So in other words, it's all Republicans' fault. It's not the current president who's permitting him to get away with not paying taxes. I mean, Obama's a Democrat and he's president, isn't he? He keeps attacking big corporations who don't pay any taxes. So why doesn't he crack down on General Electric and say you should pay your fair share of taxes and embarrass him?
He can't crack down on them if they don't change the tax.
Well, he certainly can open up his big mouth and say that the most egregious example of corporate criminality is General Electric, who's not paying any taxes. What are you talking about? You thimblehead, you?
Savage.
A lot of folks have said manufacturing in the U.S. is dead. You don't agree.
Totally don't agree. You know, we're one of the country's biggest exporters. We have great manufacturing people. The fact is, in the high-tech products we make, it's mainly material content. Labor content is lower. So our guys can compete. Our people can compete with anybody in the world. So I think our markets are export markets. That's going to drive manufacturing.
So there is President's business liaison, Jeffrey Immelt, in person. He's the head of the President's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. And Mr. Obama, the most facile president in American history, said at the time, Immelt understands what it takes for America to compete in the global economy. And Immelt does understand what it takes to compete in the global economy, because that's why he has destroyed the X-ray division of General Electric, which he had nothing to do with creating. It's there for 115 years in Wisconsin. And he decided to send it to Shanghai, China, and to invest $2 billion in China to train Chinese engineers. But in 2010, General Electric had a very good year, by the way. That's soon after they put the stooge Obama in. Men like Immelt, Soros, other pirates of Wall Street, pirates of Penzance probably. They put their stooge in the White House. They rewrote the tax laws, and they paid no taxes at all. And then they had the stooge speak out against corporations who pay no taxes without naming them. In other words, you're supposed to believe that all corporations pay no taxes, when in fact it was the corporate pirates who engineered the collapse of our economy and then put the stooge in the White House that actually pay no taxes. In 2010, GE reported worldwide profits of $14 billion. That's good. That is great that they had profits. $5.1 billion of the total came from its operations in the United States. And what was its American tax bill? None. In fact, to add insult to injury, Jeffrey Immelt is such a great businessman and understands so well how to compete in the global economy that Jeffrey Immelt claimed a tax benefit of $3.2 billion. In addition to paying no money, he got another tax benefit of $3.2 billion. Now, that may be hard for you to fathom because you're an American business owner or a household who pays taxes. But low taxes are nothing new for General Electric. The company has been cutting the percentage of its American profits paid to the IRS for years, resulting in a far lower rate than at most multinational corporations. How do they do this? According to the New York Times, GE's extraordinary ability to evade taxes is based on an aggressive strategy which mixes fierce lobbying for tax breaks and innovative accounting, which enables it to concentrate its profits offshore. GE's tax department is led by a bow-tied former Treasury official named John Samuels. It is often referred to as the world's best tax law firm. In fact, the GE slogan, Imagination at Work, according to the New York Times, fits the tax department very well. The GE tax team includes former officials not just from the Treasury, but also from the IRS and virtually all the tax writing committees in Congress. Although General Electric is only one of the most skilled at reducing its tax burden, there are many other companies that have become better at this as well. Although the top corporate tax rate in the U.S. is 35%, one of the highest in the world, companies have been increasingly using a maze of tricks, tax credits, shelters, and subsidies to pay almost nothing or pay far less. I'll give you another example at another time. But all I want you to know is that Obama hires Jeffrey Immelt, GE's chief executive, as his chairman of the Council on Jobs and Competitiveness, and the man pays no income taxes, and now, to add insult to injury, he deports an entire division of General Electric to Shanghai, China. How could this be going on in our country at this time? How could it be happening? It's happening because we have the most corrupt, degenerate administration in American history. We are not only not a banana republic, many banana republics are doing better than we are economically, we are something closer to a socialist slash capitalist dictatorship. It's an astounding hybrid of corruption. Mo in New Orleans, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to say, these companies, they just transfer these presidents around. For instance, I come out of the communications, and this guy, Daniel Akerson, who used to be president of AT&T, had no experience at AT&T as far as in communications. Right. Now he's president of General Motors. They just get these people, and they're just figureheads, Mike.
I agree with you. They're very similar to Obama or any other president. The corporations use them simply as, you call them figureheads. Yes, that's a good word. That's as good as any. We don't have to get more derogatory than that. That's right. Many of them are not that smart. They're just good speakers.
And like I said, Akerson came out of communications, had no experience at AT&T. Now he's president of GM. It's pitiful.
Obama had no experience in government. And look, now he's the president of the United States, and everyone's looking right through him like a hollow man. He's not getting away with his act anymore, is he?
People are wise to him now, thanks to people like you.
I don't know whether it's people like me. I mean, every time he speaks, you could see he's making it up as he goes along. He is the ultimate hollow man described by T.S. Eliot. And that's why we're in trouble. 1-800-449-8255. Do you think it's valid for me to talk about General Electric today like this? Do you think I'm being disloyal to, who am I being disloyal to? Am I being disloyal to America by pointing out that Jeffrey Immelt is doing these dastardly things to America? Am I being disloyal to America by attacking an American corporation that is so wonderful to the people? Am I being disloyal to America by talking about the relationship between Obama and Immelt? Well, if I am, then I'm even going to get more disloyal in the next few minutes, because this is what's coming now is going to make you throw up altogether. If you've just eaten lunch or you're about to eat dinner, I'd say you turn the gas off on your stove. Because what I'm about to tell you is far worse in some ways, not in terms of dollars and cents, but in terms of stink value. The stink value in the story I'm about to tell you is so high that you may not be able to eat for at least 24 hours. And the head of it all, the center of it all, is none other than Al Sharpton. Al Sharpton, the man who rose from street radical, no education whatsoever, a divinity degree of his own making. I don't know where he got it from. I hope it's from a legitimate university, but he's been the Reverend Sharpton for decades now, according to the scared, frightened rabbit media. And the way he has corralled and controlled the corporate world is by bringing rent-a-mobs of minorities outside their buildings and chanting and marching. And if they don't give him the shakedown, they march even another day or two. And it worked very well for him with his National Action League or whatever it's called. It's something right out of a totalitarian dictatorship. And he's gotten very far, but now he's gotten even farther. You're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. Al Sharpton, uneducated, absolutely no education whatsoever, is allegedly going to be given a talk show on MSNBC owned by Jeffrey Immelt. Now, how is that possible? Why would they give this man, who has no credibility anywhere, a talk show on MSNBC? Well, the answer is, first of all, take a look at who else is on MSNBC. But here's something you don't know. Did you know that last year Comcast used the so-called Reverend Al Sharpton to lobby in favor of its bid to take over NBC Universal? And did you know that now the cable news channel owned by NBC Universal, MSNBC, is weighing whether to make him a daily television host? Can you believe that a gutter agitator like Sharpton can use mob tactics to convince Congress to let Comcast buy NBC and then be rewarded with a talk show on MSNBC? Mr. Sharpton, the president of the so-called National Action Network, a so-called civil rights organization, supported Comcast as it sought government approval for its takeover of NBC Universal. But it gets even worse. What I'm about to tell you is even more nauseating. Not too long ago, Al Sharpton's so-called National Action Network gave an award to one of the stooges who runs MSNBC by the name of Bill Griffin. His real name is, I think, Bill Griffin. I affectionately call him Bill Griffin. In April, Mr. Sharpton presented a National Action Network award to Bill Griffin, the president of MSNBC. We have no reason to expect that the award to Mr. Bill Griffin was for any reason other than his superb work in creating perhaps the most propagandist information ministry ever seen in the history of the country. But Mr. Sharpton, the ex-street agitator, dismissed any connection there too. Sharpton said, the year before, we honored Jeff Zucker. And Zucker didn't give me Saturday Night Live. And then he said, on top of it all, when we lobbied for NBC, I certainly wasn't given a job at that time. Moreover, on its website last week, the National Association of Black Journalists wrote that while Al Sharpton was about to advance to a permanent position, quote, there are no black journalists who can tout a similar promotion. Isn't America great? Isn't diversity great? Isn't everything that the civil rights activists worked for so incredibly beautiful that it's come down to this, that a street agitator can threaten corporations for so many decades with impunity, that he now winds up with a talk show on a network in order to further the propaganda of the government media complex? If you want to read the whole story, I linked it up from the New York Times. If you think that this is a right-wing story, well, now I guess the New York Times is a right-wing newspaper because it's from the New York Times and it's linked on michaelsavage.com. It was published July 27th. And the headline is Sharpton's push for Comcast raises issues about possible MSNBC job. Now, remember who warned you about the government media complex? I did in 1998. In fact, it plays a major role in something I'm writing. Because the government media complex is fundamentally censorship in reverse. It's censorship in reverse. It's how it works. Because the purpose of a media is to be a watchdog, not a lapdog, which I've said many times. But when the lapdog becomes an attack dog of the people, not of the people, but on the people, literally when a channel like MSNBC or NBC itself becomes not only not a watchdog of the political class, but an avenue to attack the people as it attacks the Tea Parties, for example. Every time you turn on the vermin on MSNBC or CNN, don't you see them ripping into the Tea Parties, ripping into those of us who want lower taxes, smaller government? Why do you think they're doing it? Because they are exactly the kind of propagandist that Joseph Stalin used in Russia, the same kind of propagandist that we used under Adolf Hitler's regime in Germany, or Chavez uses in his failed South American socialist empire, or Fidel Castro uses in his island hellhole. That's what America is now becoming, a despotic third world mess. I'll be right back. Savage. here we are watching this budget debate go on and on and on, and we don't understand it. Many of us really don't understand what's at stake. Everything is at stake. We've got an out-of-control Marxist president using classic Frankfurt School Marxist tactics, which I actually described in great detail in Trickle Up Poverty. You'll have to research that one. Go to Trickle Up Poverty and look up the Frankfurt School. They're using the tricks of the Frankfurt School, which goes back to the 1920s. The Frankfurt School of Politics, which was developed by communists in Europe, Frankfurt, Germany, to be specific, says that you never offer a plan of your own. You only attack the enemy. You constantly put them down and attack them, but you never offer a plan of your own. Now, if that doesn't describe the tactics of Obama, I'd like to know what does. If you think this is coming out of a vacuum, you're mistaken, because I am a student of fascism. I'm a student of Marxism. Obama, by every definition, he doesn't have to wear a red beret and wave a red flag. He's a Marxist. His policies are Marxist. His behavior is that of a Marxist. So his activities and those surrounding him are those of Marxists, is that of the Frankfurt School, which is attack, 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 and constantly attack the enemy, never agree with anything they do. That's what the Democrats are doing. And the Republicans, as modest as they are, as moderate, fiscally conservative as they are the only hope we have. They're trying to not raise taxes, and they're trying to cut down on the so-called entitlements, which are nothing but bloated bureaucracies that are rife with corruption. Many foreign groups have come into this country and sucked our system dry. They've robbed us blind with our Medicare and our stupidity like you cannot believe. We're like a big, fat, sitting elephant being eaten alive by pygmies who have brought us down by sticking a spear into our you-know-what. And our elephant is now on the ground, and the pygmies are sucking the fat out of the guts of the elephant of the United States of America. And so those who represent us even modestly, the Republicans are saying, hey, look, maybe the elephant can get off the ground if we take the spears out of its you-know-what and suture up the wound and stop cutting the fat out of it. You know, let the animal restore itself to health. Stop with the entitlements. You know, and I both know these so-called sacred cows, Medicare, Medicaid, and all. You know how corrupt they are. You know that many people who collect those checks never earn them. The SDSI checks, for example, known as crazy checks in San Francisco, are collected by failed writers who sit around in cafes stoned out of their minds all day long, who smoke marijuana and collect crazy checks coming out of the Social Security Fund. And they boast about it, SDSI, and they work sometimes small jobs without paying any taxes, such as selling marijuana or things of that nature. I'm giving you one example. Or those who provide various and sundry services for Medicare, which you well know are beyond comprehension and costs. An aspirin for $32, an ambulance ride for $10,000. You have no idea how bad it is. And the government does know how bad it is. So the Republicans say, cut a certain percentage out of Medicare, Medicaid, whatever. Cut down on these stupid entitlements, raise the retirement age by 2 years. And the Democrats are saying, no, we don't have a plan. We don't want a plan. Whatever you say is no good. And so that's why we're in this situation. Now, coupled with that, you have pirates like Jeffrey Immelt. In my estimation, he's a pirate. What is a pirate but Jeffrey Immelt? How would you define a pirate? What is a pirate? Define what a pirate is. Here is the man who is at the helm of General Electric, who is held up as one of our greatest leaders, one of our greatest business leaders. Here is a man who does not pay a dime in income taxes on $5.1 billion in U.S. earnings alone. And now we wake up to the final insult, where he is now deporting an entire division of GE from Wisconsin to Shanghai, China. And he's going to invest $2 billion, not in jobs in America, but in China. To me, that's indictable. Mark in Texas, how do you feel about that?
I agree with you 100%. I'm telling you, this is what I call the worst type of predatory capitalism. Mind you, I'm saying predatory. We're letting these big corporations, these banksters, they're out of control, and they bought and paid for officials like Obama and before that Bush and the whole Congress of this country. This is why we're outsourcing our jobs. This is why we got rid of Glass-Steagall. It's destroying our country, Mike.
Yeah, where's the big mouth Bonnie Frank now? Where's big mouth Bonnie Frank on a case like this? How come he doesn't open his big stinking trap in Massachusetts about General Electric's activities? You know where's what? The big mouth Bonnie Frank when we need him?
If it was up to people like me, he'd be in an orange jumpsuit. along with the other clowns, have destroyed.
Well, I'm telling you, the people are not going to take much more of this. They are not going to take any more of this. These people are pirates, and they're destroying this country. Look, the last straw for me was not only the not paying taxes, I couldn't believe they got away with that. But to wake up and see they're taking an X-ray division that was there 115 years, and this pirate is now moving into China, he should be stopped from doing that. A rational government says, Immelt, you've gone too far. Not only are we firing you from the Jobs Council, you're not moving that division to China, period. We're passing an executive order. You're not doing it. And now we're investigating you and your whole board.
Mike, what we need to do, we need to get rid of these trade agreements.
Okay, I don't have an answer for you what we need to do, because it's not going to be about getting rid of trade agreements. It wouldn't be with a fountain pen. The enslavement of the American people by the pirates of capitalism. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm no socialist. I'm a capitalist. But I believe in fair and just capitalism. I believe in paying fair taxation. But I don't believe in rigging the system and paying no taxes and then dismembering a giant corporation like GE in the name of the bottom line. No, that's not fair and balanced capitalism. That is crony capitalism, pirate capitalism, predatory capitalism. It's corporate welfare of the worst kind. What Jeffrey Immelt has arranged for GE probably supersedes all the money paid to all the welfare recipients in the United States of America. Think about that one. For those of you who don't know what I'm saying, you add it up, you'll see who's getting more money.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
All right, welcome to the Savage Nation. I guess you could say we were talking in hour one about enemies within, guys like John McCain, who attacked the Tea Parties, calling them Tea Party hobbits, and then mocked Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell. I mean, he should be ashamed of himself, but we know that McCain has no shame. We know he's a laughing stock and a buffoon. And then we focused on Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of GE, as another man who many consider now one of America's chief corporate enemies, enemies of the American people, that is. A man who should know better. The man has an A.B. In applied mathematics from Dartmouth College, and he serves on the board of trustees of Dartmouth, and he has an MBA from Harvard Business School, Jeffrey Immelt, and he's on the board of two nonprofit organizations, one of which is the Robin Hood Foundation, a charitable organization which attempts to alleviate problems caused by poverty in New York City. Now, let's depart right here. The Robin Hood Foundation, rob from the rich and give to the poor. That's a very interesting concept. But here we have a CEO, Jeffrey Immelt, who pays no taxes on earnings in the United States of America, even though they exceeded $5 billion in the year 2010, because they have hired former IRS agents to rewrite the tax codes for them. No taxes. So he's not robbing from the rich to give to the poor. He's robbing from the middle class to give to the rich. And that's exactly why he's on the Robin Hood Foundation. This is how it works. In other words, remember the fable, Through the Looking Glass, Alice in Wonderland? What do you think Mr. Carroll was getting at in his time? The hypocrisy of the political class, the hypocrisy of the governing class, of course. Where everything was projected to the people in reverse. Everything was projected in reverse. So you're a big thief. You rob from the middle class. You pay no taxes. You enrich those who own your corporation, the principal stockholders. And then you go on a board called the Robin Hood Foundation, and you say that you're helping the poor. Or you take a guy like Al Sharpton, a street rabble-rouser, deeply involved in one horrendous act after another, uses the minority mob game, and now is rewarded with a job on MSNBC where he actually belongs. That's where he fits perfectly, incidentally. He'd be a great opposition piece for that network. But this is how the whole thing works. You scream about injustice and poverty and civil rights, and you do the exact opposite. You conduct injustice. You induce poverty. And you fight actual civility and actual rights. And that's the way the game is played in America, through the looking glass. Everything is reversed. And with friends like these, we don't need enemies. We've been talking about Jeffrey Immelt as a case in point in General Electric. And if you think this is just right-wing foaming madness, I would suggest you go to michaelsavage.com and link up to the article from the New York Times, which shows exactly how this man avoided paying any taxes for GE in 2010, and then see what he's doing to the X-ray division from Wisconsin, which he's deporting to China. It was not built by him. It was built by men far better than him. It was in Wisconsin for 115 years, and this piratical capitalist now says, I'm moving it to China, not only to hurt the people of Wisconsin and to get even for Obama with the governor of Wisconsin, but because I can do it and I want to do it, and because I'm owned wholly and entirely by the Chinese Communist government. It's sickening. It makes me ill. Carl in Wisconsin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Brad Thor, Lee Child, Vince Flynn, and now Michael Savage featuring Jack Hatfield. Mr. Savage, I have a question for you, sir. How did you develop the qualities of character, the moral compass for Jack Hatfield? Was it kind of an amalgam? Take a little bit of John Wayne, maybe stir in some Clayton Moore, and season with Audie Murphy. How does your creativity work?
Let me tell the people what you're talking about. This is one of the best, the most incisive callers I've ever had. He is referring to my forthcoming novel, which will be out September 13th, called Abuse of Power. And the protagonist is Jack Hatfield. He's a new character to fiction. So the question to the general audience is, what do you mean, how did I develop him? How did I get an idea of who he is and how he thinks and what he does?
As you started to develop the character and you wanted to have his, like, the archetypes for his character, that moral compass, how did you do that?
I took what was in me that I wish was stronger and made it stronger on paper. In other words, in the situations that I put Jack, I said to myself, how would I like to act? And I made him act that way. In other words, I magnified his heroic qualities and diminished his weaker qualities. You follow me?
Yes.
In other words, I took a lot of what I feel in myself that I don't really do, that I wish I could do. And I let my mannequin act for me on paper in Abuse of Power. So you say, I don't know. I don't think I copied any characters in that sense. A lot of it is real, based on reality. In other words, how would I act if? How would I not act if? Why don't I act this way in this situation? What have I done in my life that's worthy of mention? What have I done in my life that I'm ashamed of? And I worked with those elements. I really didn't think of any living or fictional characters for Jack.
And you know, right now, Brad Thor, Lee Child, and Vince Flynn, they all have new novels coming out in September. And of course, now you're going to be in that same group, which means, you know, those guys and you now will have to have a new novel each and every year, unless, of course, you're James Patterson, where you can do, you know, a book in a month. So do you have ideas for Jack Hatfield down the road?
Yes, I do. In fact, the publisher, St. Martin's, did sign a two-book deal. It was a big deal for them. I'm actually working on Jack Hatfield's next adventure, but I have to wait and see how this one does.
Sure.
Before I write it. No, but I'm putting together ideas. And the next one is going to be somewhat set in the Basque Country, I think. I'm not sure. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, because this one's set in San Francisco, where I live. And a lot of what's in that book are the streets, the very streets I walk, the very restaurants I eat in, the very Chinese herbal stores I've stopped in, the very sunsets I've been bathed in, the very clouds I've been immersed in. They're in that book. Now, you're obviously deeply involved in fiction reading, right?
I love that genre. I truly do. It's, of course, and it's an escapism, but, of course, everyone reads for different things, for enrichment, for enjoyment, to learn. And for me, I just love those kind of military kind of whodunit kinds of things there. I can't get enough of them.
Oh, you asked that. You hit on a raw nerve here. Jack has a friend in this book named Tony, and Tony is an ex-CIA, ex-Special Forces Green Beret medic from the Vietnam era, and he and his cohorts play a major role in stopping a terrorist attack later on in the book that is based upon some expertise that I do not have directly, but which I learn from people who actually work in that world. It's very exciting. And, you know, the boating stuff in the book, remember, Jack lives on a boat, which I think is unique to a character, is it not, in this day? You know, the genre you just mentioned, you got me going, Carl. In the genre you just mentioned, do any of those writers have a character who lives on a boat?
No.
No. Okay, so Jack Hatfield's living on a boat is certainly not unique to the world of literature, but it brings up Jack London, and it brings up images that haven't been used in American fiction in a very long time, maybe in 100 years.
I'm right now crossing out the days of the calendar. I've got it pre-ordered through Amazon, so I can
oh, God.
Wait.
You know, this almost sounds like an infomercial, but it isn't, Carl. I mean, you called out of the blue, but you made me very interested in my own book again. I said I wouldn't talk about it again until it was out, but you've got me excited for the publication now.
Let's bring it on.
Carl, thank you very much for the call. And Charles, do me a favor, record that conversation that we just had with Carl so I can reuse it when the book comes out. That was fantastic. That was amazing. I mean, I couldn't do a better commercial for the book, but there's so much more in it that I don't want to talk about. I have a female hero that no one's ever seen in fiction before. You know what a novel is? The word is novel. It's supposed to be novel. Unfortunately, most novels are not novel. There's nothing new in them. Nevertheless, you read them because they're good escapism. It's like movies. Why do I watch movies when you can predict most of the plot? Because they're entertaining. But a good novel is novel, meaning it keeps bringing up novel things, new twists, new characters, new settings, new locales. And I can guarantee you that the settings and locales in my book, you have never seen in a novel before, because I'm the only one who's been there in many of these places as a writer. I mean, I take them on an island in San Francisco Bay that nobody even knows exists. And there's a major torture scene on the island. It's a pretty good. I look at it from one of my studios. Maybe I'll lead a tour there one day. All right, so we can go back to General Electric if you want, something as prosaic as a corporate crook, a corporate enemy, an enemy within, in my opinion. It's horrible. It's making me sick. That's why I'm glad he asked me about the book. What would you like to talk about on the Savage Nation right now? Let's see. What else do we have in sound? We had John McShane, who unfortunately is still a U.S. senator. He did not go to Tibet and open that Buick dealership I was hoping he would open after the election. You have got Representative Steny Hoyer, who says we're playing Russian roulette with our nation's creditworthiness. Oh, please give me a break. And now we'll turn to the Muslims within. We realize that Islam is a religion of peace. We know that. And in fact, if you say otherwise, you're liable to be accused of being a brother to the Norway massacre fellow. So we would never say that Islam is anything but a religion of peace. And although most of the acts of terrorism in America that have occurred from 9/11 onward, even going back before that, were conducted by Muslims, we aren't supposed to notice that. We're supposed to think that it's a Methodist from Minnesota in a wheelchair over age of 96 who fought in World War I. Or we're supposed to think that the real terrorists are old Irish nuns going through the airport. Or even little white boys, 5 years old, with braces on their legs because they had a disease. Those are the real enemies of America. If you're wearing a hooded robe and you're carrying Al-Qaeda literature, you should be ushered right onto an airplane because you don't want to offend Muslims. And, of course, we had the horrendous massacre of Fort Hood, where a Muslim major named Nidal Hassan killed 13 and injured 40. Even though he was signaling he was going to kill, even though he said he was going to kill, even though he indicated to everyone that he was crazy and a jihadist, signing every psychiatric report that he reported in the army with Allah be blessed or something to that effect. Didn't matter to the U.S. Army. They were so ingrained with their stupidity. They were so ingrained with their cowardice. They were so ingrained with their Muslim-loving stupidity that they let Nidal Hassan keep ticking along like a time bomb until he exploded. Well, guess what just happened? You know what just happened? I'll tell you what just happened. Listen to clip one.
Private Nasser Abdo, who was basically AWOL from Fort Campbell, from his unit at Fort Campbell, was arrested yesterday at 2 p.m. in Killeen, Texas. He was caught trying to buy weapons and explosives from the same gun store, Guns Galore, in Killeen, Texas, that Major Hassan Nadal bought his weapons where, in which he carried out that Fort Hood shooting a year ago.
One more clip from the wonderful, this is a really good report from Fox News, Jennifer Griffin, congratulations. Listen to clip two.
Private Abdo is a Muslim who had applied for and received conscientious objector status from the army. He was also in possession of jihadist material when he was arrested and is facing federal charges because he was found with, quote, bomb-making materials. We've obtained a video of Private Nasser Abdo from the Middle East Media Research Institute and an interview that he gave to Al Jazeera a year ago after he applied to be a conscientious objector on the eve of his first deployment to Afghanistan. He is shown praying. He talks about being a Muslim.
I can't both deploy and be a Muslim.
You can't deploy and be a Muslim? I have a few other things that I want to say about Muslims in the military, which I will say when I come back.
Savage.
Abdo bought three boxes of 12-gauge ammunition, smokeless gunpowder, and a magazine for a Springfield 9mm gun. He paid for the items in cash and then left in a taxi cab. The owner of Guns Galore called the Killeen police. Private Abdo was picked up from a local hotel in Killeen. He also visited an Army surplus store and paid for in cash an Army uniform to include local Fort Hood unit patches. Law enforcement officials suspect he was planning an attack in or around the Fort Hood area. Of course, that was the site of the November 2009 shooting that left 13 U.S. soldiers dead.
Mm-hmm. Another Muslim soldier at Fort Hood was planning a terrorist attack. Now, of course, I can't wait for Representative Sheila Jackson Lee to say that this is a right-wing conspiracy smearing a poor innocent Muslim who was simply rehearsing how to defend Fort Hood in his hotel room, that he, although he was a conscientious objector, he bought the army uniform and he bought the ammo and he bought the smokeless gunpowder and he bought the magazine for the gun in order to make certain he could defend non-Muslims at the base from evil Christian right-wingers from Norway. I'm certain that Representative Sheila Jackson Lee has a speechwriter working on that as we speak. Now, if this was a laughing matter, I'd be laughing, but it isn't a laughing matter. It is through the looking glass. The entire government runs every aspect of our lives through a looking glass. They see a ticking time bomb like Major Nidal Hassan signing every memo with, what was it, Allah Akbar or something. Now, what if you had a Christian psychiatrist who signed medical forms with Jesus as Lord? How long do you think he would have lasted in the army? Well, of course, he wouldn't have lasted a second. The Christophobes would have come down in their black robes and thrown him out of the army. But if you're a Muslim and you make such statements, why then again they look the other way because everything is through the looking glass. How the army actually got its act together and stopped soldier Nasser Abdo today, I don't even understand how they can even do this. I'm surprised the ACLU has not yet taken over the U.S. military and prohibited this kind of behavior. Because according to the credo of the liberal, they would rather see 99 terrorist acts go forward than one innocent individual prohibited from a terrorist act. Isn't that how it goes? Hassan Card said, soldier of Allah. Piece from a magazine today. Jeffrey Immelt, General Electric's chief executive, said on Wednesday his generation of business leaders had succumbed to meanness and greed that had harmed the U.S. economy and increased the gap between the rich and the poor. He said on yesterday that his generation of business leaders had succumbed to meanness and greed that had harmed the U.S. economy and increased the gap between the rich and the poor. Really, Jeff, where'd you get that from? How'd you figure that out, Jeff? Why don't you pay taxes on your income for the company, Jeff?
Savage.
Private Abdo is a Muslim who had applied for and received conscientious objector status from the Army. He was also in possession of jihadist material when he was arrested and is facing federal charges because he was found with, quote, bomb-making materials. We've obtained a video of Private Nasser Abdo from the Middle East Media Research Institute and an interview that he gave to Al Jazeera a year ago after he applied to be a conscientious objector on the eve of his first deployment to Afghanistan. He is shown praying. He talks about being a Muslim.
I can't both deploy and be a Muslim.
My concern with the focus of the hearings that we've had is that the isolation of certain groups. I would like to have a hearing on right-wing extremist ideologues who advocate violence and advocate, in essence, the terrorizing of certain groups. I think it's important for a committee that has the responsibilities of Homeland Security to be addressing these issues in a fair and accurate manner. Well, do you want to dance and hold my
hand? Tell me I'm your lover, man, oh, baby. Through the looking glass. Through the looking glass. Sheila Jackson Lee, Democrat, Texas, wants Homeland Security hearings on right-wing extremists and ideologues, and they shouldn't focus on Muslims. Very interesting. Through the looking glass, all through the looking glass. Yeah. Shall I read from Abuse of Power? It's too soon out. I mean, it's too far ahead. It's not good promotion, but the guy asked me the question, the caller. Let me read one piece. One piece, you'll see why the book is so beautiful. In some ways, it's as good as Jack London's writings. And in some way, it reaches the levels of Jack London in terms of the depiction of San Francisco. I'll read it to you. You decide for yourself. So Tony and his friend Jack are walking in San Francisco. Are you ready? Let's see. Driving over the Golden Gate Bridge that night, Jack wondered about the decline of America. He couldn't believe that the entire bridge, this beautiful Art Deco structure, had been built in only 2 years. Such a feat would be impossible today, considering the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the laws, the lawsuits, the regulations, the spotted owls, and the environment construction would take forever. As with all those hypocrites, the special interests had pumped up their own self-importance, inflated their own influence and resources at the dearest price of all, the diminishing of America. As he drove under the South Tower of the Golden Gate Bridge, Jack looked up at the spires. He was one of the few civilians who knew that there were elevators running inside of these spires right to the top. An old Bohemian friend from North Beach had been an iron worker on the bridge and once took Jack up to the top to see one of the most stupendous views in the world. He felt as if he were only a step away from heaven. On Friday, Jack and Tony walked to Pagliacci's on the Wharf, one of their favorite restaurants, taking the long way up Columbus Avenue. On the way, they saw an old familiar face, Johnny Evans, retired SFPD. They nodded hello as they passed. Married 3 times, noted Jack, when they were out of earshot. All brief wives, muttered Tony. Brief wives once made the briefs rise, Jack retorted. Now they fill the court's briefs with lies. Tony snorted a laugh. A new mantra? Not new, Jack said. Just haven't thought about it for a while. Well, go easy on the Rachel juice. You don't want your ex-wife coming up on you. True enough, it's just that she's been on my mind because I think it's a default setting. Things come apart like they did the other day. It shoots me to my own blast zones, Iraq or Rachel. Familiar turf, stuff you've already wrestled with, lets you get your footing to process new trauma. Something like that, I guess, Jack said. The more he thought about it, the more Jack realized Tony had a point. Anytime something bad happened, he went to the evils he already knew. It made sense. Columbus Avenue crested near a Chinese herb store where Tony bought a cure for prostatitis 20 years ago. Small black pills, took them for just 4 days, never another ache. The instructions showed which herbs were in the pill and what each did in the body. The theory behind the cure was explained. The herbalist thought all prostatitis was first caused by an uncured venereal infection, a sort of latent gonorrhea. The pill contained a powerful antibacterial plant. It worked so well that Tony bought bottles for his friends, who were amazed by the results. At the top of the hill, Jack and Tony both smiled inside at the view of the bay, past Alcatraz to the green hills of Marin. It was one of those sunny but cool winter days where the water was China blue, as Tony often described it. This was one of the good touchstones, a place Jack visited to purge the negativity. It was like those old World War II newsreels, Why We Fight. This was why. His home. It never failed to raise his spirits. At the restaurant on Fisherman's Wharf, where old-timers who still knew where to get the best seafood still ate, despite the touristy nightmare they called the Redneck Riviera, Tony and Jack enjoyed a quick lunch. After a few glasses of wine, Jack became loud. Pointing through the large picture windows, he almost shouted at Tony, "Look, see over there in Ghirardelli Square? That clock tower? Most clock towers, even our most famous tower at Berkeley, they're all derived from Giotto's Campanile." I'll stop right there. I just read from Abuse of Power, Michael Savage's debut novel, to be published by St. Martin's Press September 13th, 2011. It can be ordered right now on Amazon.com. I enjoyed reading it. I really did, because it was well written. It was well written. So we played some rock and roll. We played some a Fox report, an excellent report from Fox National Security correspondent Jennifer Griffin about the soldier Nasser Abdul, who was found with jihadist and bomb-making material near Fort Hood, about apparently to kill some more soldiers. Shocking that they were able to do it. And then we heard from the dunderhead, Sheila Jackson Lee, who interrupted Homeland Security hearings the other day and said we shouldn't be looking at Muslims but right-wing extremists and ideologues. There you go, through the looking glass. Don't know how the country survives with people like Obama, Sheila Jackson Lee, and Jeffrey Immelt. So let's play Whole Lot of Shaking Going On by Jerry Lee Lewis on New Rock and Roll Sheet Number 5. I'll take your calls at 1-800-449-8255 in a moment. Let's hear that song, my friend. Whole Lot of Shaking Going On by Jimmy. There you go.
Whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking it. Whole lot of shaking going on. Well, I say come on over, baby.
What happened to my America? Where is the white male vocalist? I grew up in America when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. How we have gone from that age to whiny chicks who are shooting up junk and sleeping with each other, I have no idea. But all I can tell you is I like the 50s a lot better than I like the year I'm living in today. So let's hear a little Whole Lot of Shaking Going On from Jerry Lee Lewis. When the chrome was thick and the women were straight. I guess I could play Heartbreak Hotel by Elvis Presley, but I don't feel like getting into a maudlin mood. You notice last week when that junkie songstress shot herself up and died on the bathroom floor after drinking booze and taking cocaine, ketamine, crack cocaine, and a few other things? The media could not stop glorifying this degenerate junkie as though America had lost Martha Washington herself. They were in tears. They were hyperventilating. I've never seen them so filled with grief that Amy Winehouse had finally gotten what she'd been asking for all of these years, which is an overdose. I couldn't believe it. They never spent as much time talking about a Congressional Medal of Honor winner who threw himself on a grenade to save his buddies in Afghanistan. They went on and on about a degenerate junkie songstress who shot herself up over and over again and died. Why? Well, you could say liberalism is a mental disorder, and you'd be right. Or you could say through the looking glass. You'd also be right. You could say a lot of things and you'd be right. But whatever you say, you're not going to be listened to. Take a look at what we have in the White House. Take a look at Harry Reid. Take a look at the vermin in the media. Take a look at Jeffrey Immelt. Take a look at the people at the top of the heap and ask yourself if there's hope for this country. Ask yourself if there's hope for this country. Now, why is John Boehner in trouble today? You want me to get down to the brass tacks of what's going on in Congress? I can do that, too, if you think I'm just trying to fill in time until the show is over. Boehner is in trouble right now because the Tea Party votes are not there for him. What do you mean by Tea Party votes? The people that the old schmuck John McCain attacked today? Did you hear what John McCain had the nerve to say about the Tea Parties? He called them hobbits. Listen to clip 6. This old shameful fool should just be banished from America. Listen to what this old SOB had to say about the Tea Party.
Republican House that failed to raise the debt ceiling would somehow escape all the blame. Then Democrats would have no choice but to pass a balanced budget amendment and reform entitlements, and the Tea Party hobbits could return to Middle Earth having defeated Mordor. This is the kind of crack political thinking that turned Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell into GOP Senate nominees.
Oh, shut up, you old stupid man, you. With friends like you, we don't need enemies. Who wrote this for you, your stupid daughter? Who would write this, your idiotic daughter? Shame on you, John McCain. I'm sick of hearing about your stupid Vietnam War experience. You're the one who shot the rocket off on the aircraft carrier and killed all those men. You're shooting a rocket off on the deck of Congress right now, you stupid old bigot, you. I'll be right back before I say something I regret.
Savage.
So why is it that Boehner is hitting rough water? According to a blog on NPPR, that's National Pol Pot Radio. NPPR has a website, NPPR, National Pol Pot Radio. They wrote an article, "Why Without Tea Party Votes, Boehner Speakership Hits Rough Water." So National Pol Pot Radio, an outlet written by and for Marxists, says that it's the tail wagging the dog, meaning the Tea Party people are controlling the House Republican Conference, namely members linked to the Tea Party, including freshmen linked to. Notice that there's something dirty with the Tea Party. Listen to what it says. NPPR writes, "Those members have little allegiance to Boehner. In fact, many of them eye him suspiciously as a card-carrying member of the Washington establishment. That's part of the problem, not the solution. They felt burned by the budget deal Boehner negotiated with President Obama earlier this year to prevent the government shutdown in March, that Boehner told them there were more spending cuts in that package than there actually were. They vowed they wouldn't be fooled again, and that was reflected in part in Boehner's failure to get enough votes for his debt ceiling bill by the time of the scheduled vote, 6 p.m. Eastern Time Thursday." So in other words, NPPR, National Pol Pot Radio, is again disrespecting the people of this country. The Tea Parties, after all, are the people. They're largely the middle class. They are the working class that the left likes to pretend they represent, but of course they don't. The left represents the welfare class and the illegal immigrant class, but they don't represent the working class. The Tea Parties and the Tea Party representatives who are put in power by the working class of America are actually doing the right thing. They're doing exactly what the people want them to do. But then again, NPPR, National Pol Pot Radio, wouldn't understand that because they've moved so far away from their original belief as to what the working class is. They don't even know which way is up and which way is down, which way is north, which way is south, which way is left, and which way is right. Dan in Minnesota, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Michael, you need to go and do those books on audiobook. You have the greatest voice to do those on audiobook for all us audiobook listeners or readers.
You would like to hear me actually. You see, I don't record my own books, and the sales are very bad in the audiobooks because they hire someone else to do it.
That's why you need to do your own books. You have a great voice.
What about Kindle? Are you going to buy Abuse of Power on Kindle? I hear that that's a huge phenomenon today.
No, I would rather buy it on audiobook.
You wouldn't buy a hard an actual pages?
Nope, because I'm an audiobook reader. And I listen to them while I'm driving down the road, just like I listen to you on the
radio.
I see.
Well, it's an interesting point. But Abuse of Power is so thick, it could probably stop a speeding bullet. You might be able to put it inside your coat the next time you fly in America. It might protect you from a terrorist attack.
That's good.
All right. I'm glad you enjoyed the reading of the book from my Abuse of Power. Spokane, Washington, Joe, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
God bless you, Dr. Savage. I, as a wounded veteran and served in Vietnam, I understand what's happening right now. We're seeing a lot of psychops to take our attention away from Iran. Thank you for saying about Mr. McCain. Not only did he blow up those pilots and sailors, this man blabbed his mouth off to the NVA while I laid in a hospital with my leg blown off. God bless
you. No, it's horrible. You know, I'm not a Vietnam veteran, but I respect those who are. In fact, I worship them, every last one of them. And the fact of the matter is, I am so tired of not being able to say the truth about John McCain. The man has been a dundering fool from the day he was born. You know, his father was a distinguished admiral. His grandfather was a distinguished admiral. He comes from a great family. But this man is sort of almost the black sheep of the family when you think about it. I mean, after all, didn't he accidentally set off that rocket wasn't it the Forrestal that set the whole ship ablaze?
Absolutely, it sure was.
All right, so it was an accident.
But that doesn't turn him into a war hero, does it?
That does not turn him into a war hero. You have answered prayers that I have been trying to tell people for years about this man. And, Mr. Savage, I absolutely love you. You are the greatest voice on the radio right now. I am not fooled. I did psych ops, and that's what we're seeing right now in this country. They have got the elderly. They've got people so scared right now that, you know, I could go for hours on this weather underground on the whole thing.
You go way back, so you know the whole game, and they're running the country today. The weather underground, in fact, is in the White House. All the philosophy of the weather underground is now in Obama's administration. I studied it in the 60s. I know who they are. They are in the White House, not only in the form of the czars, but nakedly in the cabinet positions.
Absolutely. Absolutely, sir.
Joe, I'm sorry. When you were in Vietnam, and were you in psych ops in Vietnam?
Sir, I was a Force Recon Marine with 3rd Marines. I served with the 1st Marine Division. Yes, sir. I did psych ops. I did it all. And there's a lot of great guys here in the state of Washington that I served with, and this has been one of our biggest frustrations is exactly what you just said was with Mr. McCain.
We've all been holding our lips about him because we don't want to be accused of being anti-military, especially those of us who did not serve in Vietnam. We have a special duty to keep our mouths shut when it comes to soldiers. But, you know, this guy, for what he said today, attacking the Tea Party, calling them Tea Party hobbits, and attacking Sharon Angle and Christine O'Donnell, calling it crack political thinking, to me, that was the last straw for this fraud.
Absolutely. Sir, I would love to have you check my Twitters out sometime if you were to let me talk to your producer, because, yes, I scream and rant and rave on Twitter.
I don't blame you. So do I. Okay, Joe, stay on the line. We'll get a contact for you. I really appreciate your calling the show. Let's go to New York City, WOR. Joe, go ahead quickly. What's on your mind?
Michael, I want to comment on McCain. Let's not forget how many guys died on the Forrester and the boat was supposed to have been sunk. His grandfather, the admiral, insisted that the boat or commanded that the boat be repaired, not to diminish his grandson's standing. He graduated 5 from the bottom from the academy, the Naval Academy. He also was discontinued by the academy, thrown out.
Well, the reason he was 5th from the bottom in the Naval Academy, on this, understandably, because he was a carouser and a drunk.
Correct. His grandfather had him reinstated a few times. We don't know how many times exactly.
So John McCain is the black sheep of the McCain family. He has disgraced the McCain name over and over again, and now he's doing it on the floor of Congress. And I think that we, the people, have a right and an obligation to speak out about this old drunk. You know, Kennedy is gone. Kennedy crossed the River Styx last year, and now the McCain-Kennedy duo is still at it. I mean, this guy seems to have somehow encapsulated all of the evils of Kennedy in his mouth. He now sounds like Kennedy on the floor of the Senate.
Am I still with you, Michael?
Yes.
I'm not. Okay.
No, you are. You're still with me. I just got agitated. Well, Joe, please go on.
Also, was that this man here, with Obama last 2 years ago with the election 2.5 years ago, did not go against Obama because Obama had this against him, which was not brought out to the public. And this is why he was...
Wait, you mean the thing about the admiral coming up and trying to cover for him? Obama knew about that? Is that it?
Exactly right. And everyone knew about it pretty much if they read. They don't read the public, unfortunately. And the problem is that...
Well, I don't think people know that he accidentally set off a rocket on his jet on the Forrester and killed how many men? How many men died on that ship?
Catalyst. He was in the Catalyst when this happened, and he was prepared to take off. And he hit the wrong lever.
Well, he just hit the wrong lever today in the Senate. And I'm the admiral of this show. And John McCain is a shame. That's all I can tell you. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, what's in the news? The best stuff is on MichaelSavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, borders, language, and culture. Top left. Headline, another U.S. Muslim was planning Fort Hood Massacre 2.0. Isn't diversity grand? Nasir Jason Abdo was AWOL from Fort Campbell, and he was out on a, he didn't want to fight because he was a pacifist. Meanwhile, he was allegedly collecting bomb material and thinking how he can kill as many U.S. soldiers as possible. Bring more of them in the military. That's what we need, diversity. The gun-running scandal to Mexico is going right to the top. Obama talked about gun tracing in 2009. It's on my website. And here's a sickening story from the Washington Times. The Catholic Church calls for tax increases and fewer spending cuts. Now, what about a separation of church and state? And what do you think about a bloated church that lives largely on the handouts of a federal government and is now working in hand and glove with the federal government? I know it's a sacred cow, but I'm sorry. The bishops are wrong. You know who else is wrong? Obama's job czar, Jeffrey Immelt, who runs General Electric, is moving jobs out of the U.S. to China. He's moving the entire X-ray division, 115-year-old division of General Electric from Wisconsin, to China. To me, that's an offense that should be imprisoned. Not the offense should be imprisoned. Anyone who does this should be imprisoned. How does he keep his job? Answer, this is the most corrupt administration in American history. Government twice the size it was a decade ago. You got to see this. Take a look at the white supremacist murder suspect that we found that a mixed-race woman is marrying. I can't even describe it. A picture is worth 1,000 words. McCain, the shame, slams the Tea Party hobbits in budget debate. Screw him. How about the crazy Congressman Wu from Oregon, the sex-mad congressman who resigned? He could be eligible for $1 million in pensions and benefits. Congressional pensions are up to 3 times more generous than private pensions. Isn't diversity grand? Soros returns capital to avoid reporting on who invests in his so-called hedge fund. ATF manager shared fast and furious info with the White House. Unbelievable. Oh, yes, Mexican troops, 36 of them, invaded Texas the other day. They said, whoops, we made a mistake. Was it a probe? The Swift boat defender of John Kerry, remember him? Stripped of his medal, put in jail for downloading child pornography. But they stripped him of his Silver Star, not for the child porn charge, but because apparently he didn't earn it like somebody you may know. Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Also on MichaelSavage.com. Arab Spring dreams are dying amid violence. I'm not shocked. Are you? The garbage is piling up, as is the violence from the Muslim Brotherhood. Palestinians say that they use archaeology to rewrite history. No kidding. Marion Barry's son pleads guilty to drug possession. I would say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, but in this case, see, I would say the crack vial doesn't fall far from the, or something. Media whores at MSNBC let Al Sharpton lobby for them and then gave him a talk show? What? You're shocked by this? Also on my website, riot breaks out on Hollywood Boulevard. Brothers accused of beating up an airline pilot in the airport. They said to him, when you fly to San Juan, I will have you killed. That's what they said to a pilot. Nice looking fellas. Isn't diversity grand? The global warming scientist who claimed polar bears are drowning is under investigation because he invented it. On the bottom of MichaelSavage.com, you will find an ad for Abuse of Power, my fiction debut. You can order it from Amazon.com before it is sold out. What else is in the news? Well, everything and nothing. I mean, maybe you're not interested in the middle of the summer. Pelosi says we're trying to save life on this planet as we know it today. Carney the Blarney House says the GOP is incredibly juvenile. Why? For representing the people. I guess that's juvenile to the communists. Reed vows gridlock. Military recruiters are asked to make sure they bring in more gays. The number three Democrat compares the debt limit increase to the Emancipation Proclamation. I mean, I have a lot of words for that idiot. They're all not pleasant. What else is in the news? It's all about the budget. How hard is this to figure out? Well, I guess it's very hard if you don't know how to stop spending. All of this and more today on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Captain Mike down at the waterfront. You can hear the gulls in the background. Been feeding them the scraps from the table. Gave them the old turkey this morning. Teddy was jumping up and down and saying, why not me? Why not me? You know, I've been reading since I wrote the novel and waiting for it to come out, Abuse of Power, St. Maunds. It'll be out in September. I've been reading more again. I got sick and tired of reading, you know, websites for news stories about how bad Obama is. I mean, it's all true, but I can only take so much. So I went back to what I used to do most, which is I started reading literature. And I walked my way backwards by reading a contemporary novel, which is fairly well written. But then I got bored very quickly because they're superficial in so many ways. So I went back to Joseph Conrad, who I cut my teeth on. And it's important for me to read you a couple of paragraphs from Joseph Conrad about when a ship goes down and people die. Well, what would happen if a ship went down and people died? It's from a story in his fiction, The Mirror of the Sea, published way back in 1906. Now, I don't know if Joseph Conrad is taught anymore, but something you should know about Joseph Conrad is that he was born in Poland. His native language was Polish, and he learned English and became established as one of the greatest writers of the 20th century in English. To show you what you can do if you have a brain and if you have talent. And I do not believe he took education courses put out by a government that taught, English as a second language with Polish instruction. I don't believe so. I think he taught himself English. So The Mirror of the Sea was published in 1906, and it's a collection of Conrad's autobiographical reflections on man and his relationship to ships and the ocean. I found this in an old yachting magazine that I was about to, you know, throw out. It was a couple of years old, for November 2010. And I said, wait a minute, Joseph Conrad. So let me read you a paragraph for the heck of it, okay, just for a change of pace. He's talking about being on a ship, a 1,000-ton bark, I think is what it was. I can't find the exact. Here it is. Our craft, a Clyde-built bark of 1,000 tons, was rolling to the point where he thought that he'd be thrown off the mast. So they went up on the mast to see what was going on. The decks were full of water, the gears were flying, and they were still running at 10 knots an hour. And then he's up on the mast, and suddenly up there in the slings of the foreyard in the midst of our work, I felt my shoulder gripped with such force in the carpenter's powerful paw that I positively yelled with unexpected pain. The man's eyes stared close in my face, and he shouted, "Look, sir, look, what's this?" pointing ahead with his other hand. At first, I saw nothing. The sea was one empty wilderness of black and white hills. Suddenly, half concealed in the tumult of the foaming rollers, I made out a wash. Something enormous rising and falling. Something spread out like a burst of foam, but with a more bluish, more solid look. It was a piece of an ice floe, melted down to a fragment, but still big enough to sink a ship and floating lower than any raft right in our way, as if ambushed among the waves with murderous intent. There was no time to get down on the deck. I shouted from aloft till my head was ready to split. I was heard aft, and we managed to clear the sunken floe, which had come all the way from the southern ice cap, to have a try at our unsuspecting lives. Had it been an hour later, nothing could have saved the ship, for no eye could have made out in the dusk that pale piece of ice swept over by the white-crested waves. And as we stood near the taffrail, side by side, my captain and I, looking at it, hardly discernible already, but still quite close to on our quarter, he remarked in a meditative tone, "But for the turn of that wheel just in time, there would have been another case of a missing ship." Now, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, I'm going to read you the last paragraph, because this now goes to you, whether you are on a ship or in a car,
whether you're sitting in a house or rotting in a jail cell, because it's so universal in its description of what happens when a human dies. Listen how he ends this little tale. Nobody ever comes back from a missing ship to tell how hard was the death of the craft and how sudden and overwhelming the last anguish of her men. Nobody can say with what thoughts, with what regrets, with what words on their lips they died. But there is something fine in the sudden passing away of these hearts from the extremity of struggle and stress and tremendous uproar, from the vast unrestful rage of the surface to the profound peace of the depths, sleeping untroubled since the beginning of ages. Now that's writing, that's literature, that's Joseph Conrad, an excerpt from The Mirror of the Sea. Very nice, Michael. Applauding for myself. It's such a, you know, this is such an isolated profession. It's incomprehensible. It's one thing if you do it in front of a live audience. You do it on a radio show. You don't even know if anyone went to sleep. Did anyone enjoy that? Or you would rather I never read literature again? Just that. Obama's no good. Them Dems are commies. No, I mean, it's all true, but how much can I do of it? There's only a limit to it. I just wrote out my order of food for the night for this weekend. Atlantic smoked salmon, bagels, 4 dolmas, and a small milk for the missus when she comes over for the coffee. Humble guy. Go out in the boat. I'm not going to hit an ice floe this weekend in the Bay Area. Don't worry about it. Here's a guy in his 162-foot yacht showing off with his young girlfriend with the fake boob job. Making memories with his girlfriend and President Joe and his wife, Jean. Some men live for this, to have the big boat and the picture of them with the young girlfriend. 4 years later, click, click. 2 years later, they got a half a baby between them. The yacht she owns, she took the yacht. Oh, guys, will they ever learn? There's no beating it. Don't you understand there's no beating life? Marrying a young woman when you're that age, is like hitting an ice float. No matter which way it is, you're going to get hit with that ice float, whether it's initially or late. Take a look at Mel Gibson. Don't they understand it? I mean, because I read that Paul McCartney just getting married again to some girl he met in the Hamptons. And he made an interesting statement, McCartney. He said, I like being in love. Well, that's very nice. I mean, the last one he just got rid of with the one leg sure was a nice love story, wasn't it? The one legger must have cost him $300 million for being in love. Love is a fantasy. Don't you understand that love was invented in the Middle Ages during the Renaissance, that there was no love before that? Hey, shall I tell you my cynical view of love? Because it's true. See, America lives in a fantasy, which is beautiful. We all share in this social construct, all of our social constructs. We all share in them or negate them, but we all share in them one way or the other, either by believing them or negating them. Love is a social construct that, according to my reading of literature, did not exist prior to the period that Shakespeare wrote in. In other words, I'm not saying everyone was a caveman before then, but they married for reasons other than, oh, my God, she's my soulmate, and I met her on 48th and 3rd Avenue when I was out walking my terrier, and she's my soulmate. I have a whole other theory about social behavior that's emerging in my head, which is that we're living through one of the most libertine ages in American history where everybody's doing it like bees and bugs. Bees and bugs. Human beings are now mating in the Western world like bees and bugs. So what's going to happen, and I don't know when, how many years, my suspicion is that there's going to be an emerging generation that is the opposite of this lascivious, do it in the road type of generation. And I think we're going to go back to an almost Victorian sensibility with regard to sexuality. That's what I think is going to happen in this country. I don't mean tomorrow. I mean, I'll be laughed out of the theater if I said it was going to happen in the next few years. It's not happening in the next few years, but it is going to happen in this country. There's going to be a movement away from the why not do it in the road mentality. Now, if you care to comment on it, I'm not the right guy to call. Take it up with your priest or your psychiatrist. I got nothing more to say on it. I just felt like sharing after reading Joseph Conrad. Because of all that beautiful writing by Conrad, I want to go back to one line in there that struck me worthy of reading to you on the air and taking up your valuable time. And he's talking about nobody ever comes back from a missing ship, okay? Now listen to this. The last anguish of her men. Nobody can say with what thoughts, with what regrets, with what words on their lips they died. And I said to myself, boy, is that universal. Because that talks to all of us. So when I went to high school, for example, if they taught us Joseph Conrad, who we read, by the way, in Jamaica High School, The teacher explained to us why he was considered one of the great writers of the 20th century. It's because he could write a novel that was a good story, and within the story there were universal truths, the truths that people could relate to, whether they were at sea or not at sea. Nobody can say with what thoughts, with what regrets, and with what words on the lips they died. Isn't that true for you? Doesn't that also speak to you? You think you're not going to die that way? You think you're not, or I'm not going to die in the same exact way, with thoughts and regrets and words on my lips as I die? We're all going to die with unfulfilled promise and unrequited dreams. And again, this goes to a social point I was trying to make on this show. The myth and the fantasy put out by the news slash entertainment media is so overwhelming that they have the entire population hoodwinked into believing that if only you were a slut like Lindsay Lohan, or only if you were a degenerate like one of the Hollywood, you know, gigolos running around, you'd be happy like them. It's absurd. They're not happy. They're on drugs and they're in rehab, in and out of rehab and drugs. Why? Because their lifestyle is unfulfilling. Don't you understand it? They're trying to beat the rap. You can't beat the rap, man. The rap is life. The Buddhists have it right. The Buddhists say it's a wheel. It's the wheel of suffering. And the day you accept the fact that you are put on this earth to suffer is the day you'll suffer less.
Savage.
You know, this week President Obama gave a speech to the nation pushing his radical tax increase. He won't cut a dime in spending. I mean, it's crazy. And here to talk about it is Chris Edwards with DownsizingGovernment.org and the Cato Institute is here to talk with us about the debt and budget issue. Chris Edwards, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much for having me.
Bring us up to speed on these last-minute negotiations of plans, debt, and the deadline.
Well, the Senate Majority Leader Reid came out with a supposed budget-cutting plan, as did House Speaker John Boehner. Now, the media is calling these plans, but really all we have is a few talking points from these leaders, and the devil will be in the detail as to whether these plans actually cut spending. I've been concerned that of these $3 or $4 trillion in spending cuts that hopefully will be in this final debt limit package, that some of these are going to be smoke and mirrors cuts. For example, Senator Reid proposed a cut, in quotation marks, of $1 trillion in his plan yesterday, which is really just the savings that we will get from withdrawing our troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, both parties agree to this troop reduction in Iraq and Afghanistan in the next 10 years, so that's not really any additional savings beyond what we're going to be saving, hopefully, anyway. So I think listeners to this radio show need to make sure that the final package approved by Republicans has real meaty spending cuts and not phony smoke and mirrors cuts.
Well, what are your overall thoughts on President Obama's speech and Speaker Boehner's response?
I think President Obama hasn't given up on the idea that he wants a giant tax hike in his debt limit increase, which is rather absurd because the Democratic Majority Leader of the Senate came out with his plan, and he's given up on tax increases. So Obama is behind the curve here. The reality is taxes won't be hiked. This will be a spending cut deal, and the question is going to be how big are those spending cuts?
Well, before this can be resolved, do we need an accurate definition of what government actually is and it's supposed to do? Of course we do.
At Cato's Institute website, downsizinggovernment.org, we go through the whole budget, and we talk about programs that we don't need the federal government doing that are wasteful, that are damaging. Many federal programs damage the environment. Obama promised when he came to office he would go line by line through the federal budget and cut out these sort of wasteful programs. He hasn't done it, so we've done it at Cato.
I don't think a mere adjustment of tax codes will counter our debt, or is an out with the old and with the new approach what we need? I mean, we need to start all over again.
Well, we desperately need tax reform. We have the highest business tax rate in the world, which is ridiculous. We're shooting ourselves in the foot with our uncompetitive tax code. But I think tax reform ought to be tackled separately by Congress. This current bill regarding the debt limit should be all about cutting spending. We ought to cut spending in every department and agency in the government. Speaker Boehner came out with a $3 trillion spending cut plan. That's $3 trillion over 10 years. But we're going to be spending $46 trillion over the next 10 years. So even John Boehner's cut only represents a cut of 6% of total federal spending. I think Congress can do much better than that.
I believe the balanced budget amendment is important to you. And do you think it's really going to be in the final package? I don't.
I think balancing the federal budget and passing a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution is a great idea. I think it really is a tall order. Even if it got passed out of Congress with the supermajority required in the House and Senate, unfortunately, I think a lot of states may be hesitant to do that because state governments get a lot of free money from the federal government these days, hundreds of billions of dollars. And so you got a lot of liberal governors who may be resistant to a balanced budget amendment at the federal level.
Okay. In the final analysis, what has Speaker Boehner done right and what has he done wrong in these negotiations with President Obama and Democrats?
Well, so far the House Republicans are sticking together, sticking to their no tax increase pledge. They're sticking to their pledge that spending cuts here have to be as big as a debt limit increase. And frankly, they're winning the debate. The year started with President Obama proposing a budget with absolutely no reforms, which was frankly pathetic for a government that's heading into this giant debt crisis. So the Republicans have pushed the Democrats further and further to the center. This has been so far looking like a pretty big victory for the Republicans if they get some substantial spending cuts in this deal.
What can we the people do?
Well, President Obama went on television a couple nights ago asking Americans who are concerned about the debt situation to email and call their members of Congress. I'd encourage members of this radio station who want real meaty spending cuts in this package to call their members of Congress and demand some real cuts in fiscal sanity.
Well, where do you think it goes from here?
After the debt limit vote, I hope we get some big spending cuts in this bill. There will be more budget battles down the road, and this is frankly a good thing. Budget battles are good. They allow Americans to think about what they want from their federal government. And even with $3 or $4 trillion in spending cuts in the current bill that might be passed, we need much more spending cuts than that. So we need spending cuts every year in coming years, frankly, if we're going to tackle this enormous $14 trillion debt we've built up.
Those are important questions. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I actually think that the Democrats are prepared to make compromises and will follow my leadership. If it turns out that the other side won't budge on anything, then we're going to be here every day until we get this done. What the American people are looking for is not that kind of partisan politics. And what I'm offering is a way for us to finally solve this debt and deficit problem in a serious way.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Whatever happened to leadership? Whatever happened to authority figures discussing moral issues, issues such as we are discussing today on the Savage Nation? And it's an interesting cultural observation unto itself that it has fallen upon some of us in the media to take up the mantle of discussing issues that really matter to families in America, such as should drugs be decriminalized or legalized? Should prostitution be decriminalized or legalized? This is the issue that we're talking about right now. I stumbled upon it. I didn't plan on talking about it, but we're very deeply discussing it on the Savage Nation. I want to challenge you right now because you're going to be shocked by this. I just found something that I thought was immensely interesting. We're going to read to you the percentage of men by country who paid for sex at least once. In other words, male clients or johns of prostitutes worldwide from 21 studies conducted between 1994 and 2010. Okay? And they included only 15 countries for which they found data of men paying for sex at least once in their lifetimes. Which country, before I read this list, would you think is the highest in the use of prostitutes and the lowest? Well, what's the point of answering? Don't call me. But you're going to be shocked by the answer. Again, it's not a very scientific study, but it's certainly a starting point. The number one country for the use, or let us put it this way, for men who paid for sex at least once, the John's chart, Cambodia, 80% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once. Thailand, 75% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once in their lifetime. Italy, 45% of men have gone to prostitutes at least once. Spain, 39% of men. Japan, 37% of men. The Netherlands, 21% of men. The United States, 20% of men. China, 20% of men. Switzerland, 19%. France, 16%. Australia, 15%. Sweden, 13%. Finland, 13%. Norway, 12% of men. And strangely enough, the United Kingdom, only 8.8% of men admit to having gone to prostitutes at least once in their life. I guess that's because they're not interested in women to begin with, so it's at the very, very bottom of the chart. And I suppose the reason in Norway that the number of men who go to prostitutes is so low is because they're so high on drugs, they don't even want to go to women at all. And then if you look at the chart the other way, Cambodia and Thailand being at the top of the chart, it seems to be endemic or a part of their society to use women in this manner. Cambodian men are quite ready to admit that they seek the favors of prostitutes, even though they may be married and have two or three girlfriends on the side. It's part of their life. That's according to Leela Barak in Business Times magazine. Thailand. Do I have to talk about Thailand? I mean, but I'm curious about the bottom of the list, which is the United Kingdom. The number of men paying women for sex being the lowest of this group. It's very interesting. Now, the rate of divorce has increased in England, as has the proportion of men who were never or previously married. And this may explain some of the increased demand for commercial sex. But nevertheless, I think the women and their lack of morality in England, by and large, is also somewhat accounting for the low rate of men who go to prostitutes. They don't have to, since so many of the women are acting like prostitutes, in plain English. I mean, you know, one of the things I specialize in is not mincing words. And when you have a society like the United Kingdom where the women basically are all the younger ones act like prostitutes, which is no different than many, many regions of America. We don't have to spell it out and become graphic and make burlesque-like jokes here. But you know that the Hollywood establishment is pushing the image of women being like men. You know, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? And many of us are disgusted by this behavior. It also accounts for the fact that the Caucasians amongst us have the lowest birth rate in the United States of America amongst all races. And that is because the women don't want to have babies. They just want to have fun. So let's get back to the main issue. And let's take your calls right here on the Savage Nation. Alice, in New York on WOR, where do you stand? Are you for or again legalizing prostitution?
Oh, where, you jump. A gray area. I'm for it to be legalized and regulated. Why? Well, it's like you said before with the disease. I mean, if you look back through history, during the Civil War, a lot of these guys were going out away from home for the first time seeing prostitutes, and the generals were having a big problem because they were losing a quarter of their guys to all the various venereal diseases of the day, you know, before they even got out on the battlefield. And their solution for it was to legalize it and regulate it. And that's what they did, and they saw an immediate drop in disease. You know, they had the prostitutes. They would have to go get a license for prostitution, go to a doctor and get checked.
Well, but here, look, there's certainly an argument to be made for that. But as I mentioned to you earlier, just because they go to a doctor doesn't mean that the next man to be with them is going to be disease-free and not pass, and she's not going to pass it on to the third man, the second man after him.
Oh, well, no, absolutely not. But I'm saying it reduces the chances, you know? I mean, and like you said before, of course, if they're diagnosed, are they going to stop working? Probably not. That's their bread and butter.
No, I hear you, and I'm not trying to be, you know, kind of naive about any of this either. Are you yourself at all familiar with this practice?
Not really.
No, I'm trying to find out if you're in the biz.
Yeah, it's, you know, people are going to do it anyways. You know, it is the world's oldest profession. And if people are going to do it anyways...
Well, sure, and if they get caught, they wind up on CNN. What could be better?
Well, yeah, well, it could be good or it could be bad, you know?
All right. We don't have to make any juvenile jokes about it, but it's an interesting discussion, and we haven't yet heard from the other side to the extent that I'd like to hear from the other side, whereas it's saying it should not be legalized from the moral point of view, from the family point of view. So let's go to Patricia in Arizona, who takes that side. Go ahead, Patricia.
Yeah, I just, you know, is this going to be one of our daughter's career choices?
If you turn on HBO, it makes it look like it's a choice between becoming a lawyer or a prostitute and working in a cat house.
There's a lot. I work at a school. There's a lot of messed up kids in this world. And is this going to be something that is going to allow our sons to keep abusing our daughters and our daughters just taking that? I don't understand how people can want to do that. You know, that, oh, yeah, one of my first jobs was, I didn't work in a fast food restaurant. I worked in a brothel. You know, it's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. And
well, here's the problem. I don't even think we'd be having this discussion if America wasn't melting down into a third world nation right in front of our eyes. In other words, if we didn't have the debasement of our society, promulgated by so many different forces, and I don't have to name them for us to know who we're talking about, I don't think we'd even be talking about it. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But because we have been debased to the point that we are debased, take a look at the White House. Take a look at how the two occupants of the White House have trashed the White House, debased the presidency itself, abused the presidency. That is why we're even talking about legalizing prostitution, pros and cons. It's because we are very much like a third world nation on a moral level right now. There's no question about that. Texas, Matt, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, hi, Dr. Savage. Yes, I'm against it. And you can talk about disease. You can talk about everything. But what it really boils down to is a person seeks someone outside of their marriage because they're not capable of being intimate. And they get a false sense of intimacy when they seek out a prostitute or someone outside their marriage. Now, it's not always the guy's fault. It takes two. And,
but wait, you're saying outside the marriage. What if the man is single and cannot meet a woman? Or what if the man is single and doesn't have the time to go dating? Or what if the man is single and is afraid to date someone for fear that she's crazy or out stalking him and he just wants to use someone to relieve him? I mean, I'm laying it online here as though this is a clinical discussion. I'm not taking that side. How do you answer that point of view?
For a guy that's single... I'm not saying legalize it. If that's what he chooses to do, that's his choice. Go ahead and do it. But you're still going to lack the ability to be intimate, and it takes work. I mean, if you look at intimacy between a man and a woman, that's probably the highest form of intimacy that man has been created with and can enjoy on this earth, and it takes work. Okay?
Now, let's talk about this from a perspective that a child can understand, because many children listen to the show. How do you define intimacy?
Being able to share anything about yourself that you're afraid that other people might think you're the normal or unusual. And when you're
And bringing that into the sexual arena in a marital setting, for example.
Okay. Son, your dad and mom love one another a lot, and one of the highest forms of love that we express to each other is when we close our door at night and we make love to one another. And it's a very special time. It's the most special time that I have with my wife, whom I pledged my love to years ago at the altar of marriage. And I want you to ask me anything at any time as to how that works so that you can treat your wife the same. Michael, I went outside my marriage, and I lived in sexual sin for a long time. And I went for 7 months to a place to help me learn to be intimate, and I know it's work.
Well, you know, God bless the people from Texas. I mean, you're a straight-up guy, and you laid out a scenario right now that's not commonly discussed. I've never heard it put that way, Matt. You've been through something there to have come out so clear on this.
It's intimacy. It really is. And I mean, I can ask all your listeners to think about the person or persons with whom they that they feel closest to, and they are the ones that have let their guard down and shared a secret of whatever kind it is, and that's a form of intimacy. And the highest form is when you take off your clothes and you love on your loved one, and she loves on you, and at the end you're both smiling and you're happy, and there's no judgment, and there's pure contentment between the both of you, and that is worth the work.
All right, man, you really made a heck of a speech right there. I think you've changed a lot of lives. I appreciate you calling the show. I never thought we'd get this seriously into this, but hey, God bless that gentleman from Texas who really knows what he's talking about. It's something that you don't joke about. I think that, you know, we grew up in a society, all of us, and we still have it, where sex is considered a ha-ha and a joke. Is it a joke? Should sex be a joke? What is sex? Is sex just a release? Is sex the most divine experience between people? Or are we overly concerned with sex and we should just, like, walk away from it already? Is it too much?